little air guitar going on in the studio here. One of your favorite songs?
I love this song.
Yeah, it's a good one.
You know, it's about Jesus.
Really?
I saw him do one of those live and in-person MTV thingies, and he says this song was written about the greatest rock and roll ever, rock and roll rebel ever.
Wow, cool. Yeah. Nice.
And also because, you know, we have a consultant, so are they going to go his way?
I want to know if Marv is a rock and roll rebel. Marv, we've got you on the line. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
Marv Franz, leadership consultant, and I'm going to call you the principal of New Vantage. And then maybe tell us a bit about that, Marv, and then let's dive right in. But and maybe you can define rock and roll rebel for us as well.
Sure, maybe we'll get to that. Yeah, David, I work as a management consultant, and I specialize on the area of leadership development and organizational culture development. And I work in organizations across different sectors, so corporate, not-for-profit, government, and I do this work working with senior leaders typically in these organizations across Canada, U.S., and I've done some work globally as well, so... It's a real passion and love of mine, and I'm so glad I get to do it for a job.
So if you and I walked into an Indigo together and we went to the self-help section, we would find dozens and dozens of books on leadership and being a better person. And we could probably make up half a dozen titles that are probably on the shelves right now and about to be published. And there's just so much. I mean, it's such a growth industry, Marv. Has everything been said? I mean, is there that much need out there for I don't know, self-help and guidance and leadership consultants, frankly?
Well, I think maybe it's symptomatic of just the need that people feel to learn more about it. People who are leaders, people who want to be leaders, and I guess it's just proliferating. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, but I just think it's just a symptom, a bit of our times. People are struggling with knowing how to lead, you know, what to do, and where to go to look for it. Who are the leaders of the leaders? Where's the wisdom, right? Where's the leadership wisdom? And, you know, I've seen those shelves as well, looking through some of those books. And, you know, there's just a whole range of different approaches and philosophies. But I think, you know, if I say this, I think there's a lot, because of the high pace of change out there, and I don't work with a single organization that doesn't have something disruptive happening to it, that leaders, whether they're managers or senior leaders or however they define themselves, you know, academic institutions as well, whatever it is, they're really going from the known, the world that they know and live in and are comfortable with and their teams are working in, to the world of the unknown, which is we don't know what a couple of years from now is going to bring, and we have to bring people with us on this journey to the unknown. I think that there's an angst out there because people are looking for the magic answers. I don't think there's any silver bullets out there, but they're looking for guides. They're looking for wisdom.
Do you think everything fundamentally comes down to relationship? Is everything a relational problem? So, you know, I mean, even mathematics, it's quantifiable, it's charts, it's Excel spreadsheets. We can reach all the way back to, you know, the Cartesian graph, you know, deep rooted in philosophy, for heaven's sakes. But, you know, isn't everything a relationship of one kind or another? I just interested to know. I mean, I want to get to that sort of that self-help-like nature of all this, you know, people are looking for stronger relationships, aren't they? Aren't they looking to commiserate with others, their families, their wives, their husbands, their partners, their coworkers?
I think so. I think the most fundamental challenges in leadership are relational. They're not technical. They're not complex equations. They're people issues because we're bringing people along with us on a journey. From A to B, and we're trying to figure out how they tick, how they work. Am I trusted? Do they trust me? How do I get along with them? How do I encourage them? How do I help them grow? How do we accomplish this together as an organization or a business? I do think fundamentally, leadership is really about relationships.
I remember my brother and I, and I've mentioned this before, and on one of my podcasts, and I'm going to take another plug for my own podcast here, Marv. Ah. That's Tim in the background there, by the way. Face2facelive.ca. Check it out, and I'm sure you'll find something there to at least listen to once. But we just published, I think, our 404th or 5th interview, so face2facelive.ca. And Marv, you know what? We need to have you on as a guest as well, and maybe we can go a little deeper on some of these issues. But I remember telling this story, and I was interviewing someone about, you know, consulting, leadership. It was a book. It was a self-help book of one kind or another. And my brother had read, let's say it was a Jim Collins, like a Good to Great kind of a book.
Mm-hmm.
It was
right.
Like a huge seller. And he kind of finished the book, you know, all whatever, 285 pages of it, including footnotes, and said, you know, at the end of the day, the message was to be a good leader, to be a great leader, you've got to be a nice person. You've got to be, you know, you've got to be, and I think, it's a bit of an oversimplification for sure, but aren't we talking about that wisdom that you just referenced a little bit, maybe, the treating people, you know, hey, didn't I learn everything in kindergarten, you know, that I needed to know, like how to behave with other people? Is there something there?
Yeah, I mean, people will talk about those as the soft skills, but the soft skills are really the hardest things to do. So, I mean, You take servant leadership, for example, that we classically understand from Robert Greenlee, who authored all of that, those principles in the 70s. And you look at those principles of servant leadership, like listening and empathy and awareness and healing and persuasion and, you know, foresight, conceptualization, stewardship, growth of people, growth of community. These are fundamentally people principles, and it's about bringing people along with us. And it's ultimately about a kind of influence that we have with people, and it's a lot of it has to do with creating safety for people, moving
right.
People from the known to the unknown. How do you create that sense where they're feeling safe to take that journey with you? Because fundamentally, it's not a challenge typically of learning technical skills or simply adapting to a new system and learning new tools. It's really about, you know, people. In, you know, when you put yourself in their shoes as a leader, you begin to ask the questions: how are they feeling? You know, and they're probably asking questions like, can I move to this? Can I move this fast and this rapidly in this organization? Can I make that shift? Will I be okay? Will I have a job? All of those questions push them down, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs,
right,
down to sort of the basic survival pieces rather than moving them up. And they're looking for people who, you know, do I feel safe moving to that world of the unknown with that leader? Because if I do, I'm more willing to take risks. I'm more willing to be transparent about what my challenges are. I'm going to trust them to be a guide with me, even though I know they don't know all the answers to where we're going. They're a reliable person, and they actually care about me.
The servant leadership thing, and I want to get back to kind of some of the common issues and that you come across consulting, and when you present, what is it that you talk about the most? I want to come back to that. But the servant leadership idea, is that, I mean, does that have, you know, this is Canada's most listened, Tim, this is Canada's most listened to?
Spiritual talk show, yes.
Spiritual talk show. So I just wanted to get that plug in there for Drew Marshall. But Marv, is that coming out of a faith-based worldview, this idea of servant leadership, this idea of stepping into somebody else's shoes?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you can't get away from that. I mean, you look at Jesus. I mean, you look at the influence of, or you look at these principles that Robert Greenleaf writes about here. I mean, you're describing Jesus in many ways. You're describing his character, the way he interacts with people. And Jesus found himself in all sorts of situations of change. I mean, if you look at the lens, if you look at that kind of a lens when you read the Gospels, for example, and you think, where is Jesus taking people here, and what kind of influence, you know, does he have on people, and how is he developing that influence? It's really through these principles. So it's about what does it mean to be human, or what does it mean to what does it mean to care for others? What does it mean to actually truly serve others as a leader? How do I put down ego? I think a lot of those principles are certainly connected to the life of Jesus.
Marv, do you have to be a follower of Jesus to behave that way, though? I mean, are you saying sort of there's something to be learned from that life or that those parables and his teachings and so on? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I do. I don't think you do, but I think that as people do, I mean, there's a sense in which the reason why. Classical servant leadership principles have been embraced for, you know, 4 or 5 decades now. It's because they work, you know. People respond to them, and I think when people lead in those ways, I think they become attracted to Jesus because they recognize that that's the way Jesus was. And so I don't think it's the other way around. It has to be that you simply have to be a follower of Jesus to live and serve that way.
If
I could be controversial, in a sense, there's many Christian leaders who don't live and serve that way.
Right.
And that's the dilemma we find ourselves. Sometimes you come across those who don't profess to have any sort of faith or following Christ, and they're actually demonstrating these characteristics in more profound ways. And that's,
well, I think there's,
it shouldn't be that way, but yeah, it is, right?
Yeah. Well, I think there's something really interesting there too, about just what we presuppose, what we assume when we want to talk about a God or the God or our God, because the idea of a God being a servant, being a leader who serves and who actually comes alongside, I don't know that's where we normally, we don't default there. So if somebody says, oh, let's talk about God, or what about the God hypothesis, or what about a question around a religion, we don't typically think of, you know, loving our neighbor as ourselves, or the golden rule, or others, frankly, right? I don't think we do. And somehow we got to get the conversation back there, it seems to me. Marv, thanks again. And your website is newvantage.ca, VANTAGE.ca. People can find out a little bit more about you and what you do and how you do it. Talk to me a little bit about some of the common things that you know, we've talked about relationship and how that, you know, a lot of servant leadership and how a lot of issues seem to be relational when it comes down to leadership and maybe corporate life, I suppose. But you've also worked with NGOs, you've worked with churches, you've worked with other organizations, nonprofits as well. What are some of the common things that you find? Like, is there a top three list, mm-hmm. the high mm-hmm. offenders, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I'll mention a few key topics. I'd like to point your listeners as well out to another site of mine called the InspiredWorkplace.ca, and it's a book that I co-authored with a client and good friend, Hugh Druin. And really, on that, it talks about some key issues that organizations face. Organizations are dealing with trust issues a lot. You know, the stats are pretty staggering. Only, you know, 25 to 35% of employees will trust the messages coming from their own CEO. I actually don't know if that even is necessarily all that different in Christian institutions, sadly. But if I could, if you're getting at sort of what are some of the key issues in organizations, I think a lot of it has to be around navigating conflict. That's a big one. I think institutional truth telling is another one. That's a big one in terms of, are we really speaking the truth to one another about what the real reality is in this organization, or are we just telling each other sort of the narrative that we think we should be telling? I think building teams is another a huge one. You know, leaders are in the people development business. They're not just running their operations. That's a huge issue as well. So coaching is tied to that. I would say vulnerability and authenticity of leaders. I mean, many of your listeners will have heard of people like Brené Brown and so on, and her message is resonating so strongly because people are experiencing that sense of inauthenticity and vulnerability with their leaders.
Marv, why is it so hard to be authentic, to be truthful, to be transparent? What is it about it that poses such a threat to us?
Well, I'll tell you, I go from organization. I just spoke with 160 government leaders recently, and what they were telling me about their experience in a kind of a peer-based learning initiative that I was leading with them was you know what? One of the biggest takeaways was, I am so thankful I am not alone. I am not going crazy. I'm not the only one dealing with this. I'm not the only one who doesn't know the answer to a number of key questions that they thought they should know the answer to as a leader. I think there's a lot of fear of just being exposed, of feeling like a fraud, or feeling like you should know but you don't. And, you know, we build layers up. We create this persona when we come in as a leader in an organization. And what, you know, ironically, what our followers want is for us to be a lot more real about those things. Mm-hmm. They want us to be able to share when we don't have it all the answers and don't have it all together. They want us to be real with those things, but it feels like we're, I guess, unmasking ourselves or feeling like we're diminishing our credibility when really we're establishing our credibility when we do that. It's counterintuitive, but I see this over and over again in organizations that I work with.
Admitting that you're wrong, admitting failures, saying I don't have all the answers, it's counterintuitive, but you're actually saying this is what is going to build trust and develop a more authentic relationship and environment and give you the ability to commiserate. I'm pretty sure that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you water that? How do you break out of that traditional I'm going to be found out as a fraud, therefore, model?
Well,
I guess there's no simple answer, of course, right?
The best organizations have come to recognize this at the top. And so the most senior leaders of the organization that I think are the most successful are those who've been able to demonstrate a kind of authenticity and vulnerability, and they send the signal out to the rest of the organization, it's okay, it's safe to do so. It's a lot harder, admittedly, I think, for leaders in the middle of the organization to be able to stand out and do that when they're not sure the leaders that are leading them are also willing to go there. So that's the kind of culture shift that I think organizations are facing today. You know, I think there's a movement towards this, so I'm actually hopeful. I think more and more organizations are recognizing this because often what drives that is they just need creative thinkers, creative problem solvers, and I think organizations increasingly are recognizing if you're living in a culture of fear or kind of this phony persona, you're not going to actually address reality. You're not going to have creative solutions. You're not going to have innovation. And so I think world-leading organizations begin to realize they have to create those authentic environments where people can share, you know, directly and frankly mm-hmm. about their reality, what they're struggling with, and where they need to grow.
That's good. I so love. Wow. I mean, I feel like we've gone pretty deep in some respects and then barely scratched the surface in others. And there's got to be a part two to this conversation for sure, Marv. But before I let you go, I do want to know, and I did this to Ali Matthews. We had an artist on, and I said, hey, what's your favorite song of all time? I'm not going to ask you about the rebel rocker, but I am going to ask you about, I don't know, give us a couple of books, a couple of places maybe that people can go to, some of our listeners to go to, faith-based, non-faith-based folk to, I don't know, take their thinking to the next level about their own work, about their own relationships, about their own leadership style, and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I would one book that's come out in the last little while that actually speaks to this is called Firms of Endearment by
Say, it again, say that again. Firms of Endearment.
As in the old movie Terms of Endearment.
Of course,
sort of spin on that. Firms of Endearment, and it's actually talking about organizations that have operationalized love in the workplace. I'm just kind of simplifying it. It's and they've actually taken a look at kind of the market indicators for corporates that have done that.
Did you, Marv, did you say operationalize love?
Yeah, put love into play.
It sounds oxymoronic to me. Yeah. It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot more going on. I just listened to and picked up Lance Secretan. He's a well-known leadership author, and he's got a book called The Bellwether Effect. And he talks about the importance of inspiration in the workplace, and he actually talks quite openly about love in the workplace, and he's talking in corporate environments. I mean, it sounds touchy-feely, but he's talking about the importance of that as well. I think anything that Margaret Wheatley has written over the years has really impacted me as well. She's a she's an organizational thinker and leader. So those are a few titles for your listeners.
That's fantastic, Marv. Thanks a lot for your time today. Newvantage.ca. You can learn more about Marv Frenz and his work there as a leadership consultant and thinker. And Marv, it's the Inspired Workplace.
Inspired Workplace, yeah, and you can find that on Amazon.ca as well if anyone would like to order it.
Inspired Workplace. Marv, thanks a lot for your time today. Hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks for chatting. It was great to be on your show.
Thanks.
Yeah, that operational love and stuff, that's a kind of a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I want to see the pie chart on that. Right?
Delicious pie.
Well, this is the challenge, right? I mean, I've worked in a couple different environments, academic and construction and so on. And so, but I'm currently working in a nonprofit corporate environment. How do you do that? If Marv was still on the line with us, I think you lead by example.
Yep.
Right?
Lead from within rather than from up front.
Now I need to, let's define love and what does that mean within the context of our organization? I think it's cool and it's more than cool. It's essential. It seems to me.
I mean, so, as a teacher, that's
well, and I love how we've kind of come, Tim, I love how we've kind of come full circle. It's back to the relational. It's back to the community. And don't we all just want to feel loved and feel included?
And get rid of those suspicious minds.
There you go. Nice time.